When Democratic Representative Deb Haaland of New Mexico was elected to Congress in 2018, she became one of the first two Native American congresswomen ever, and she emphasized climate, universal health care, and immigration rights. Today, she's speaking about the federal government's handling of tribal communities in the U.S. in the face of COVID-19 and what she and others have called an unacceptable federal response to the coronavirus in Indian Country. Representative Deb Haaland is the representative for New Mexico's first congressional district, which includes Albuquerque, and is a member of the Laguna Pueblo tribe. Representative Haaland, thanks so much for being with us again on the show.
Thank you for having me, Tanzina.
Congresswoman, we've talked on our show before about the disproportionate impact that COVID-19 has had on tribal nations across the United States. Can you give us a sense of what the effect has been like on New Mexico's indigenous communities?
Yes, of course. Well, let me first say that every single day that tribes have to wait for funding, it puts more lives at risk. And you might have seen that some tribal communities they're in the top three, right? The top three highest rates per capita of the coronavirus. And the reason for that is that Indian tribes start way behind the start line. There's some communities who don't have running water, some who don't have electricity, some whose water is polluted. There is a shortage of broadband internet service in many tribal communities. That means that there's no opportunity for telehealth or even to contact somebody to ask questions. You know, we're experiencing these symptoms. What do we do? It's a very difficult situation. And when you think about, you know, not enough cell phone towers, not enough broadband internet, how are you going to communicate with people to let them know what they need to do for this pandemic and how they keep their communities and families safe?
Congresswoman, what's your assessment so far of how the federal government has handled the delivery, or I should say, not just the delivery of funds, but just the coronavirus pandemic when it comes to tribal communities?
So, of course, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. We passed $8 billion for tribal governments. And just so you know, we were fighting for $20 billion for tribes in the CARES Act. The White House didn't want to give tribes a dime to begin with. We fought that. We were able to get $8 billion. As it stood, the way they went about dispersing those funds was a disaster. And in the end, they didn't disperse all the funds. We had, as members of Congress, had to hound the Treasury to do what they are supposed to do and disperse these funds to tribal communities who need it. And so it's been terrible. And that is partly to blame for the high numbers in these communities, not to mention the fact that it was like pulling teeth to get the CDC and FEMA to respond to tribes when they were asking for PPE and other medical equipment that would save lives in their communities. So it's been it feels like every day we're fighting this administration to do their job, and it just shouldn't be like that.
Congresswoman, I'm wondering whether or not we know that the coronavirus has had many, many effects that go beyond health, and the economy has been one place that it's particularly hard hit. What has it looked like for New Mexico's tribal governments and communities so far in terms of the economic effects of COVID-19?
Sure. You know, some tribal communities, they were already facing, double-digit unemployment. Some tribes have up to 45 to 50% unemployment to begin with, which is why a lot of people take matters into their own hands. We have a lot of entrepreneurs in Indian Country because they can't rely on, jobs. They have to create their own jobs. So if you think about somebody who makes jewelry or does art for a living, and they rely on gatherings such as powwows or feast days or whatever these gatherings are to sell their arts and crafts, and those haven't been present, it's been very difficult. And so that's why so many nonprofit organizations have stepped up to deliver food, to deliver water, to help people to just get them past this terrible crisis. So the economies are very fragile. And so we really need to every dime will count. You know, yes, we're stepping it up and working as hard as we can to make sure they get what they need.
While the pandemic is really affecting the entire country, if not the entire world, there's something else that is happening in this country right now, and that's the U.S. Census. Tribal communities, Congresswoman, have been historically undercounted in the census, and I think there are concerns that because of the pandemic and the uprisings for racial justice that we're experiencing right now, that maybe the census is not at the top of everyone's mind. Are you concerned that the gap in terms of how tribal communities are undercounted will grow this year as a result?
Absolutely. We're every chance we get, we're messaging on the census. That is absolutely you. And thank you for raising it here. We need the census to make sure that we can appropriate funds to the areas who need it most. And it's ironic that the folks who really need to answer the census more than any other community, they don't have the resources to, right? I just mentioned to you that broadband internet service is an issue in many tribal communities. I was able to answer the census in 10 minutes. I could hop on my computer, answer it, close my computer. Folks in some of those areas don't have internet service. They don't have computers. So we rely on in-person enumerators in a lot of those rural communities. And of course, we haven't been able to send those folks out because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So the last I looked, tribal communities in my state of New Mexico were very far behind where we should be in answering the census. So we're raising it all the time. We are working with partners in the struggle to ensure that folks are answering, and we'll just do whatever we can to make sure that it happens.
I mentioned the uprising across the country for racial justice that has been going on for weeks after the killing of George Floyd. And Congresswoman, part of this racial justice uprising that we're seeing now that started even a couple of years ago after the events in Charlottesville really put a point on this idea of removing statues, and mm-hmm. particularly those that have Confederate symbolism. But it appears that there are also statues that are being removed that are of Spanish colonizers. We know that activists in New Mexico had been protesting some of these statues. Congresswoman, has the Black Lives Matter movement been intersecting with indigenous liberation movements in New Mexico? Are you noticing that?
Absolutely. Yes. So many thousands of protesters in New Mexico alone have stepped up to be a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, and I think that's wonderful. And of course, it raises other issues in New Mexico. The Spanish came to the Southwest in the late 1500s, and yes, they were colonizers. They killed people and used Pueblo Indians as slaves to build churches and so forth. We have, of course, through the centuries, our communities, the Native American community, the Hispanic communities, we've learned to live together. We have a painful history of colonization, but Native Americans and Hispanics have the highest rates of coronavirus, right? We have to stand together to make sure that we can get what we need to make sure our children have success in the future. And I think in the end, we absolutely are on the same side and the same struggle. And so, yes, it's a history that all New Mexicans, that belongs to all of us. And I really hope that we can stand together. If you go to New Mexico, we have a very unique cuisine, which is worth mentioning because the Spanish brought us wheat, the Spanish brought us livestock. The Indians had corn, beans, and squash. We have a beautiful New Mexican food that no one else in the country has. It's our history together that makes us strong. And so we're going to just keep working at uniting to make sure that we can advocate for the things that all of us need, we all need health care. We all need a quality education. We all need a broadband internet service, as I mentioned. So I think that it's a conversation that, yes, it's worth having. People need to heal and move forward.
Congresswoman, you were one of the three co-chairs for Senator Elizabeth Warren's presidential campaign. When you look at the state of the Democratic Party today, ahead of what is expected to be one of the most significant presidential elections in at least many of our lifetimes, what do you see? Where is the party headed?
Well, I think the party is, I'm very honored to be on the platform drafting committee. So it's a great group of people. I look forward to the conversations that we'll have in drafting a platform for our party. I think, you know, with the recent events with racial justice, these climate change, these are all going to be big issues. But I look for the Democratic Party to work at tackling these big issues. Everybody needs to be able to go to a doctor when they're sick. We need to fight climate change. We need to make sure that police aren't targeting people of color. These are all issues I know that we'll take up. There's a diverse group of folks on this platform committee, and I think we'll have a progressive platform that all of us can absolutely live by.
We recently had a conversation on the show about how language around identity is shifting right now. And one of the things we talked about was this term called BIPOC, or BIPOC. It's an acronym that means Black people, Indigenous people, and people of color, and it's meant to affirm Black and Indigenous people and identity. Representative, how do you feel about terms like that? I mean, do you think it's important to separate Black and Indigenous people when referring to people of color?
Well, I think that, I mean, when we think about the beginning of our country, right, this was all Indian land before it was ever the United States, before it was ever a colonized continent by the Europeans when they came over here in the late 1400s. We are, wherever you're sitting in the United States, you're sitting on Indian land. The United States happened because of genocide of Indian tribes all over the country, starting on the East Coast and coming up from the Southwest and everywhere in between. And so I think that that is our history. We have to recognize that we have different histories, different historical traumas. Indigenous peoples are unique because we are sovereign Indian nations within the United States. The federal government has a trust responsibility to Indian tribes. So I absolutely feel like we are in, yes, we should be recognized as such. So I think it's important to always acknowledge that, yes, this was Indian land. Our Indigenous folks, you know, we've had incredible struggles. And in fact, I mentioned the genocide of Indians. That was a precursor to how people would treat the African American slaves who eventually became our African American populations, with violence and unspeakable horror. So I think in that sense, yes, we're different than a lot of other communities who came over after a lot of this happened.
And Congresswoman, one, we are in a moment that's very difficult for so many people around the world, and so many people here in the United States are having a tough time, whether it's because of the coronavirus pandemic, the racial unrest that we're seeing and uprising, or just generally, you know, people who have lost their jobs. So we're in a tough historical moment right now. And here on the show, mm-hmm. we've been asking people what they're doing to find moments of joy. And it can be the smallest thing imaginable. It could be a cup of coffee that you have every day. But is there something, Congresswoman, that you do to find joy in your everyday?
Absolutely. And we have to, right? I'm so grateful that my daughter is with me. She was in Brooklyn and I implored her to come home until the virus passed. And so she's been with me. And I also have four dogs. So between taking the dogs for walks with my daughter and having an opportunity to connect with her every day, and of course, cooking. I have cooked more in the past 3 months than I ever have, just because we've been staying home. And so I find absolute joy in, you know, taking the bounty of our earth and turning it into good food that fuels our body for the big fights that we have to fuel ourselves for.
Representative Deb Holland is the Democratic representative for New Mexico's 1st Congressional District, which includes Albuquerque. She was elected in 2018 and is a member of the Laguna Pueblo Tribe. Congresswoman, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. You take care.